Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Wars can make or break a person. And growing up with deeply ingrained Christian values, Lee Halverson rose to the challenge that was the Vietnam War. Lee spent January 1969 to December 1970 in the U.S. Army. His book, Kong Catchers, A Soldier's Memories of Vietnam, is a compilation of events that occurred while he served. This is not a guns and ammo book. It's a book about a young man with Christian values at war. A young man who avoided the pleasures that were readily available and instead organized football games, drank soda, avoided drugs, and helped repair orphanages. You will enjoy meeting many of those he served with and the ways that they coped in very adverse situations. These young men served our country with valor and returned home to a less than friendly society. With Kong Catchers, readers get a glimpse of another view of the Vietnam War, one that is filled with hope and optimism. Lee Halverson, author of Kong Chasers, A Soldier's Memories of Vietnam, is our guest on This Week in America. Lee, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
I love what you've done, the approach to this book, and you do feel hope and optimism as you're reading Lee's account of what happened, his role in Vietnam. What was it that inspired you to write this book? Was there a particular moment or experience that made you start writing the book?
I went back to Sioux Rapids, Iowa, to a class reunion, and I am a connoisseur of rotten jokes and good stories. And I had quite a crowd of people around my table as I was telling stories. And a lady came up to me and said, "You ought to write a book." And I said, "Oh, I don't have enough time to write a book, but I could probably do it a story at a time." And she said, "Well, I'm the editor of the paper here in Spencer, Iowa. And if you would write an article a week, I'll publish it." And we did that for about 6 years, and I got a call from a man in North Carolina, and he said, "My name is Ed, and my sister lives in Spencer, Iowa, and she sends all of your articles to me, and I read them, and I have published some books, and I think you need to publish this. You need to put all your articles together." So he helped me compile everything, and we turned all the newspaper articles into a book.
And the book is being very well received. Rave reviews for the book Kong Catchers by Lee Halverson. That's Halverson. His website is kongcatchers.com. Book available Amazon, all of the usual places. Great stories in the book that give us a whole different perspective. One of those is about a little boy that warned you about upcoming attacks. Talk about that story.
Okay. I handled attack dogs for the Army. Generally, we guard food yards and ammunition dumps and sometimes helicopter pads. And, of course, you can't fight a war without food and ammunition, and the enemy tries to blow it up or steal it, so we have to guard it. I was on a food yard guarding that one night. Now, understand, this food yard had 6 rows of concertina wire around it. Typically, if my dog senses somebody coming, I alert the infantry, and they take care of the infiltrator. And if by chance the infiltrator gets inside of the food yard, then I'm to command my dog to attack and kill whoever that is. And I had just been posted, so I did not have time to check the perimeter at all. As soon as I was dropped off, I saw a little boy come through the last row of concertina wire. I'd guess him to be about 8 years old. He went to a garbage barrel, pulled out a rotten apple and stuffed the whole apple into his mouth and started chewing. And I looked at that little boy and I was supposed to turn my dog loose on that little boy. Understand, if I hadn't done that and there were a witness there, I could have been prosecuted and sent to Long Bend Jail. But I looked around, there was nobody else there. I did know a little bit of Vietnamese, so I went down to the boy and I asked him where he lived, and he told me. And I said, you turn around and you get out of here and don't you ever come back. And he made a beeline out of there. When I got done with my post, I put a can of peaches and a box of crackers in my Jeep. And when I drove by his house, I just shoved the peaches and the crackers out the side. And I did that every time I did post. I would pick up some more groceries and shove them out the side of the Jeep when I went by his place. One night, that little boy came to my barracks, knocked on the door and came in, and he said, G.I., be in bunker at 8 o'clock tonight. 8 o'clock that night, I went into the bunker, and we started getting rocketed and mortared, and intelligence had never warned us of this event at all, just the little boy had. And from that time on, anytime there was going to be an attack, that little boy would show up and warn us, and we would get in the bunker and we would be safe. And I guess to boil it down, I am a Christian. Jesus Christ said to treat other people like you'd like to be treated yourself. I certainly would want someone to feed me if I was starving, and so that's why I fed the little boy. And look what happened. I was taking care of him, and he took care of me and a lot of other guys at the same time.
One of the amazing stories you will read in Lee's book, Calling Catchers, the book available wherever books are sold, and at Lee's website, callingcatchers.com, Lee Halverson, H-A-L-V-E-R-S-O-N. I mentioned in the beginning some of the things that you did in a positive way while you were there. One was rebuilding an orphanage. Talk a little bit about that experience and why you got involved in that.
Sure. We were out on a body count to after a B-52 raid, and I could hear a baby crying, and understand after a bombing raid by B-52s, there's not much left. It's like a big tornado hit the place. I finally found the baby under some roofing tin, and it was trying to nurse its mother. The mother had been killed 2 days earlier. Shrapnel had blown half her head off. And the baby was starving, so I picked it up and I went back to play coup and inquired from people I knew, is there an orphanage here, someplace where I can take this little boy? And finally I found the orphanage, and it had been damaged by mortar and rocket fire. But there were people there. I left the little boy with them. And then on days off, I would go to the orphanage. I grew up on a farm, so I knew electricity and plumbing and carpentry and so on, and just started to rebuild the place. Now, understand, when GIs have time off, the typical thing for them to do is go downtown, get drunk, and get laid. But guys watched what I was doing, they started one by one to come up and say, hey, Dad, and that was my nickname, Dad. I think I'd be doing a lot more good if I went to the orphanage with you instead of going downtown. So they just more and more kept showing up all the time, and eventually my entire company was coming down to rebuild the orphanage, and everybody had picked out one or two little kids that they considered to be theirs while they were there. The one I really remember is Arturo Wilhelmino Policelli. He was a big Italian guy from the Bronx, real tough. And one of the boys he picked as his kid was a little boy that had been hit in the face with napalm. The napalm had burned off his eyebrows, his ears, his lips. and left him horribly deformed. It just made you sick to even look at him. But Art would hold that little boy in his lap and hug him and sing to him. It was a beautiful thing.
So many wonderful stories like this in a different look at the Vietnam War from Lee Halverson, our guest on the program. The book is Kong Catchers. You'll find it wherever books are sold, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pageturner.us, and of course, link onto our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You'll go directly to Lee's website, kongcatchers.com. Another story that I found fascinating was the story about the prisoner of war. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I was. My dog, Shep, was really good. Now, understand, the dog's sense of smell is 800 times stronger than a human sense of smell. Shep was so good that I could tell, just by the way he reacted, if someone out in the dark of night was North Vietnamese, South Vietnamese, black or white. And that's because people eat different foods and they exude different oils in their body, and that dog smells the oils. And by his reaction to those smells, I could tell that I was on the scent of a North Vietnamese soldier. We were going through paths in the bamboo jungle, and those paths were cut by people years ago who did it for trading reasons or maybe even with the war with the French. And they would hack the paths out with a machete, and sometimes the bamboo just got too thick and they gave up and left, and that created a blind alley in these paths. Well, Shep and I were following the scent. I remember turning right, a right turn in the path in the bamboo jungle. And as I turned, I saw this NVA soldier at a blind alley maybe 20 yards away. At that point, I should have ordered Shep to kill and dove into the bamboo. But at that moment, that guy looked at me, and something in his eyes told me he couldn't shoot. And apparently something in my eyes told him that I wouldn't turn the dog loose. And I silently walked up to him and held my hand out, and he gave me his AK-47, and I took him prisoner. I brought him back, and of course, intelligence wanted him right away to question him.
Yes.
But I said, as soon as you're done with him, I want to talk with him. And about 2 hours later, I got to go in and sit down with this guy. He was about my same age, I'd say in his early 20s. And I looked at him, and I said, why are you fighting? And he said, well, I got drafted. And I thought, oh, for God's sakes, I got drafted too.
Mm.
I said, why do you fight in this war? Why do you believe you're right? And he said, well, our commanders and our chaplains are telling us that God is on our side. And my commanders and my chaplain was telling me God was on my side. And I said, if you could be anywhere but here, where would you want to go? And he said, I just got married before I got drafted. I just want to go home to my wife and raise a family and be left alone. I had been married 2 weeks before I was sent to Vietnam, and all I wanted to do was go home to my Jenny and raise a family and be left alone. And I realized there wasn't a bit of difference between that North Vietnamese soldier and myself, but our place of birth.
Just an amazing story that is in Lee's book, Kong Catchers. Lee Halverson, our guest on the program. You mentioned your wife and the role she played in helping fellow soldiers. Talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Jenny and I wrote to each other every single day. And let me tell you, at mail call, when the captain hands out the mail, and when he's done, he says, "That's it." The look on the soldier's face that didn't get mail is the saddest look you will ever see in your life. But I got a letter every day. I came back to the barracks one day, and a real good friend of mine had signed up for a suicide mission. They had sign-up sheets, so if you wanted to go on a dangerous mission, you could sign up for it. And I went to him, and I said, "What in the world are you doing signing up for that?" Well, he was crying, and he couldn't talk, but he pointed to his bunk, and on his bunk was a picture on the front page of his hometown newspaper of his fiance marrying another guy.
Wow.
And so I wrote Jenny and I said, "Honey, you ought to send a letter to Dale, because he's really down and out and he needs a friend." Well, about a week later, Dale came down to my bunk and he said, "Hey, Halverson, you want a brownie? Your wife sent me brownies." And Dale and Jenny corresponded on a regular basis. But other guys got Dear John letters too, and Dale said, "Well, you ought to write to Lee's wife, Jenny. She'll write to you." So before we were done, Jenny was writing to six guys on a regular basis. And now when we get together for a reunion, they could care less whether I show up or not. They want to see Jenny.
That's amazing, the role that she played in this as well. A newlywed who's helping other people to get through what they were going through, the trauma of their situations at war. Just a few minutes left in the program. I want to talk about when you come home. And I mentioned came home with a less than friendly society, a greeting. Talk about returning home and being called all the names that the soldiers returning were called, including baby killer. What impact did that have on you?
I landed in Portland, Oregon, came down the stairway from the plane, and there was, well, what we called hippies back then, a guy with the colored shirt and ponytail. And I stepped off the stairway, and he looked at me, and he called me a baby killer. And honestly, for the first time since I'd been drafted, I really wanted to kill somebody. And I thought about all I had done for that little boy, to feed him and to get that orphanage fixed up and going. And he called me a baby killer. And I thought the best thing to do is just shut up and move on, Lee. So I started walking into the airport. And he followed me and just kept calling me a baby killer. And I thought, man, I don't know how I can handle this. So I went into the bathroom and just splashed cold water on my face to cool down. And he came right up behind me and called me a baby killer again. And that was it. I couldn't take any more. I turned around and I tackled him. We went through the door of the restroom, or the stall, and well, I kind of think God was helping me here, because the guy landed with his head in the toilet, and I flushed it, and his ponytail went down the pipe. And then I realized, man, Lee, you're in trouble. You better get out of here and get on your plane and get home and hope he doesn't call the cops or anything. So I ran out and got my standby ticket and got on the plane and never heard anything else. So apparently he didn't pursue that matter.
Well, unless he's...
I'll tell you, Rick, that hurt. That hurt a lot.
Well, I'd have to, yes.
He called a baby killer.
Knowing what you have done.
Out, every friend I had, when they got home, got the same kind of treatment. Dale was called a baby killer. Pete was called a baby killer. We were just treated like, hell, I didn't start the damn war. It was the politicians that did it, not me.
that would have to be so difficult to deal with. Did that finally end? Was there a point where you became Vietnam veterans, became more accepted and not listening to the chants, so not having to listen to the chants anymore?
You know, Rick, it was silent for years. The average public just didn't want to confront us at all. I felt like I had leprosy or something, because even my own family didn't want to talk about the war and the experiences and what happened. And for some reason, the culture blamed us for the war. Now, I was drafted. That wasn't my war. And I certainly didn't start it. I like to think I was an innocent bystander. At any rate, it was silent until Saddam Hussein was killed in Iraq, and that war ended, and the soldiers came home from Iraq, and they had parades and recognition for them. And I personally believe that all the people that couldn't talk about Vietnam had been feeling guilty about it for years, and this recognition of the soldiers that had fought in Iraq changed all that, because all of a sudden people started saying thank you for your service and asking questions about what the war was like and what it did to us. And at least that's the way I see it, Rick.
Well, I think there's some truth to that, and I've talked to Vietnam veterans who share that thought. That was sort of the turnaround point where people would go back and reflect and look at what happened in Vietnam differently. And again, it wasn't your war. You were drafted. You didn't have a choice. You were there because of that. This book on so many levels is such an important book. 30 seconds or so left here in the program. How do you feel about the success the book is having and you being able to get this message out there, that what you were able to do and the good that came out of your time in Vietnam?
Well, my hope is that people that read the book will say, you know, there's something to this Christianity thing of treating your neighbor like yourself. And that having a spouse and honoring your commitment and being loyal to your spouse and raising a family is a pretty good prescription for a happy life. And that's the message I hope that comes from that.
Well, it sounds like that is exactly what has happened to you and guided you through your life. The book is so well written, great stories. Again, a glimpse of another view of the Vietnam War, and you'll be filled with hope and optimism and a good feeling as you read this book. It's Kong Catchers by Lee Halverson, Halverson. His website, kongcatchers.com, book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pageturner.us. Lee, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us. Are you working on another book now?
I am, yes. It's called Jack Ken. Page Turner sent a rep out to Jenny. Died this past November.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And I had her cremated. And at the memorial service, Jenny was a watercolor painter. And I took about 30 of her pictures to the church and put them on the altar so people could look at her paintings at the service. And the rep from Page Turner looked at them and said, "Holy cow, these are fabulous." He said, "You ought to write another book about Jenny's paintings." So that's what I'm in the process of right now, is writing a book about Jenny's life and her paintings. And the reason it's called Jack Ten is when we first met in college, and fell in love, she looked up at me and held my cheeks and said, "Je t'aime." And I looked at her and I said, "Je t'aime, what the hell is that?" She said, "Well, that's French for I love you." And I said, I'm just a poor old farm boy from Iowa. I can't speak French. I'll just say Jack Dent.
I love that story, and I hope you're doing well. And after reading and listening to your stories, you sort of feel like you know her. So I'm anxious to read the book. A wonderful human being, and obviously a gifted artist as well. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to talk about that book as well. Lee, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and hopefully we can have part two of this conversation. Thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
You as well. Lee Halverson is the author of Kong Catchers, book available wherever books are sold. His website, kongcatchers.com. And, of course, information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.